Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people at the round table. And, of course, the host of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. She'll be talking today with Richard Paul Evans. He's the number one best-selling author of The Christmas Box. He's going to talk about his new book titled The Mistletoe Promise, The True Meaning of Christmas, published by Simon & Schuster. Steve Wiseman will be with us, and he'll be talking with Dr. Dean Shurzai. He's a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and the Department of Neurosurgery, and he is director of a new Alzheimer's prevention program at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. It focuses on prevention, intervention, research, and support. Steve will also be discussing charity scams and what to be aware of during this holiday season and beyond. So we have a heck of a program for you. Let's jump right in. Here's our host, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Guy Johnson. He's the son of Maya Angelou, and he's going to talk to Carol about her inspirational book of quotes titled Rainbow in the Cloud, The Wisdom and Spirit of Maya Angelou, published by Random House.
And I got to tell you, I was blessed to be able to interview your mother, and as you said so beautifully at her funeral, there's no mourning here because we have added to the populations of angels. And your book, I just loved it. And before we talk about the insights in Rainbow Cloud, from such a treasured teacher, I want to ask you the question you're always asked about being a writer and an author. Did you ever feel that you were growing up in her shadow?
No, actually. I was very fortunate not. I was never in competition with my mother. And I recognized the heights that she reached. And I am grateful that she reached them. Now, whether I am capable of reaching anywhere near there will depend upon fate and circumstance. And I'm prepared for that. I need not reach such heights as she has reached to be successful. If I can just become a better writer and better storyteller, that is all that I don't need to have. The accolades that she has achieved.
And you were so right.
And definitely, she opened many doors for me and made me aware of many things that I'm aware of without her.
And you know, that's what she does point out in the book that you have just put together, Rainbow in the Cloud, the fact that what we all need to do is just to be the best that we can be. And that's all that we can do, and we can be very proud if we do that, because it's never easy. What motivated you and your mother's longtime editor and friend, Bob Loomis, to put together this wonderful collection of her best literary gems and her inspirational thoughts?
Well, when my mom passed, she was working on a book called Encounters. And she had read various stories out of it, and we were all thrilled with it. Random House had given her a significant advance for this book. But when she passed, we saw that there was not finished a sufficient portion to publish. Random House would then willing to work with the estate in terms of not requiring the advance back. And they said if there was this possibility of working on her sayings. And at first, I was not that enthusiastic. But when I saw that it actually helped me grieve my mother, and it helped me, and it put me in connection with her in a way that I could not have been in connection with her. I mean, I heard her talking to me at night, and I would get up in the morning and I would write down what I heard her say, because many of the things that she said to me in the quiet hours of the night, she had said to me all my life. And one of those statements, for example, "Don't be a prisoner of ignorance," was something she said to me so often. Because she was, and she knew the effect and the insidiousness of racism, and that one had to struggle to get beyond it.
You were so right there. You know, I also love this quote from your mother about courage, because she had said that it's the most important of all the virtues, because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue. With consistency, you can be kind for a while, you can be generous for a while, you can be merciful for a while, even loving for a while, but it's only courage that makes you persistently and incessantly kind and generous and fair. And that's another important issue that's brought up throughout the wonderful sayings that your mother had, that we need to be fair and honest and care.
Definitely. Her whole attitude was elevating the human spirit. The theme of her teachings and her writings. It's about elevating the human spirit. And that can only be done if there is justice, if there is fairness. You cannot elevate the human spirit when there is oppressive circumstance.
And yet your mother also said something that's equally important that we often don't think about. We don't think about the importance of joy and, you know, what she had to say about it, and that it was such an important concept.
Well, I think her attitude about joy had to do with, if you can't find joy in your life, the life will be dismal. And joy is not something that just happens on its own. You have to be ready for it and willing to celebrate it.
And what's also in the book that I've really enjoyed, and the fact that it's so small, I love, because you can put it on your desk or on your night table, which is really, really nice. You have beautiful photos of your mother at different stages of her life and at different events. Can you just tell us about one or two of them?
Well, there's one photo where it looks like she's holding a light in her hand. That photo was taken at Glide Church maybe 20 years ago, and she was speaking passionately about something. I don't remember what. I was in the audience, but I don't remember what. But that photo where she looks like she's captured a light in her hand is just
right.
A magnificent. And truthfully, when you listen to her, it seemed like she had caught light in her hand.
And she certainly did, through her beautiful, melodious voice, just capture people's hearts. And I was wondering if you were at another wonderful occasion when your mother was getting an award for the National Book Awards in New York, and she was getting it from her friend Toni Morrison, who talked about her strength and her energy and her creative impulse, and your mother sang a verse, and didn't that verse kind of become the title for your book, Rainbow in the Cloud?
Well, actually, the reason we took that title was because that was a key lesson that my mother came back to. She said, be of use. A person who cannot be of use is useless. So then, and she says, you don't have to be, and I'm not talking about on a global, but on a personal level, be a rainbow in someone else's cloud. Understand that you're not in the world by yourself. Help someone else. Elevate their spirit. Lift them up. So that is what Rainbow in the Cloud is about, because that is the key to her. She is about elevating the human spirit.
And I think that we all need to be aware of the fact that we need to reach out, help our friends, our relatives, just people that we see in need, and be a rainbow in their cloud, because we each can do so much. We just have the motivation. And you must be very pleased by the reception that that your book has been getting.
Well, I do. I really do, because some of her wisdom is just amazing. She used to say, one person standing on the of God is the majority.
Love that. I just love that.
And she acted like it. You know, I mean, she had the courage for it. She was just amazing.
You also, with your grandson, I believe, have founded Cage Bird Legacy to carry on some of her work. And can you tell
us
a little bit?
Actually, my older son
your
and
older
I put together an LLC, and what we want to do is we're trying to promote her charities. She's got a clinic for women. She's got we give out scholarships in her name, and that's what we're trying to do. We want to do everything we can to promote and maintain her legacy, because her legacy is best of being human, and that's what we want. We want us all to be successful. She used to say, can you imagine the world we would live in if every child that was born had the opportunity to reach their potential? We would find cures for cancer, for bipolar mental disabilities. We would be on Mars. We could have the stars.
That's Guy Johnson. He's the son of Maya Angelou, and he has been talking about an inspirational book of quotes by Maya Angelou titled Rainbow in the Cloud, The Wisdom and Spirit of Maya Angelou. It's published by Random House. The interview was conducted by Carol Marks. Carol Marks returns in just a moment to talk to Richard Paul Evans, the number one best-selling author of The Christmas Box, who has a new book titled The Mistletoe Promise, The True Meaning of Christmas. Certainly timely. It's published by Simon & Schuster. It's coming up next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation with Richard Paul Evans. He's the number one best-selling author of The Christmas Box, and he has a new book titled The Mistletoe Promise, The True Meaning of Christmas, published by Simon & Schuster.
Now, before we talk about your latest novel, The Mistletoe Promise, I want to ask you about your first novel, The Christmas Box. And did you ever think you would become an internationally known author? And why did you write The Christmas Box in the first place?
Those questions kind of work together. I didn't expect to be a best-selling author. I wrote the story for my family. It was a story about fatherhood, and I wrote it for my children. And when I was done, I didn't publish it. I self-published, I guess. I made up 20 copies and handed them out as Christmas presents. And I really thought I was done, and I was pleased with what I had come up with. But those original 20 copies went viral, and within weeks they had been read hundreds of times, and then bookstores began calling with orders. And that's what launched the book. Since that time, we have 8 million copies in print. It's gone worldwide. And it opened the door for a career of now I think I'm this is my 26th or 27th novel.
And you're writing novels about other things, too, that are very popular. But I want to talk about the latest one. And I did learn some things about Christmas in The Mistletoe Promise, because is it true that in a way Charles Dickens invented Christmas?
Yes, that's true. That's true. Of course, Christmas has been around for hundreds of years, but before Dickens, Christmas was less popular than Easter. And in fact, in some parts of early America, that people would actually be punished. You could be jailed for celebrating Christmas. It was considered a pagan holiday. And even the date of Christmas was chosen because they were trying to match the pagan holiday. So we don't know when Christ was born. There's really no reference. And some would even say, well, it's, you know, shepherds aren't going to be out in the freezing night in the middle of winter with their flock. So Dickens really actually changed our culture.
But even though we don't know those two things that we just discussed, what I think The Mistletoe Promise and the true meaning of Christmas, as being such an inspiring book, it moves us. And how did you come up with the wonderful story that has all these elements, love, loss, grief, and healing? What gave you the inspiration for this?
It actually started with a Facebook post. It was on Valentine's Day, and I had wished my followers a happy Valentine's Day and asked if any had any special plans or special memories of Valentine's Day. And a woman wrote and said, my favorite Valentine's Day was 20 years ago. At the time, I was single. I didn't have anyone in my life. And this man I barely knew came to me and said, I don't have anyone in my life, and I hate the idea of another Valentine's Day with no one. Could we just pretend to be a couple for this week? And she said, I was surprised. I said yes. I didn't know what his motive was. And in the end, he had no motive other than what he said. He was very sweet. He sent me sweet notes and flowers and chocolates. And she said, it was one of the best experiences of my life. And after Valentine's Day, he said thank you and went on his way. And I thought, there's a spark of a story there. And so that's what Mistletoe Promise is about, a woman who's dreading the holiday season. Her husband has divorced her 3 years earlier. He cheated on her with her best friend, so she's alone, she's distrustful, and she just feels broken. And then on a November day, a stranger approaches her in the food court, and he has this proposition. He's dreading the holidays as well, and he's lonely, and he says, what if we pretend to have a relationship? And he's an attorney, so he makes up this contract, which is called the Mistletoe Promise. And there's four rules. One, no deep questions. There's no good to come from that. Two, there's no physical relationship. It's strictly platonic, unless they're like holding hands to sell the thing. Three, no telling anyone the truth about the relationship. And four, the contract is void on Christmas Day. And so that's the premise of this story.
And really, it's so moving. And you make a couple of great points in the book about because these two people have deep secrets that they don't reveal to each other right away. And you make the point that it's not good to have secrets because they destroy relationships. And you also make another wonderful point that I just am going to remember forever. And that's the fact you have at the beginning of the chapters, you have a little quote from the main character, the nice lady in the story. And it's about the importance of forgiving yourself as well as others. And we don't do that very well. And this is this little golden rule, and I just got burned into my head. The golden rule is a two-edged sword. If some of us treated others as we treat ourselves, we'd be jailed.
Yes. I have met people who they're kind to everyone around themselves, and they treat themselves so poorly that if they were to treat someone that way, they would be thrown in jail. That's exactly right. The underlying message of Mistletoe Promise is about forgiving ourselves. Both characters do have deep secrets. Elise has punished herself in the court of her conscience every single day for years and years. She wakes up in the morning and she's made a mistake. It's a big mistake. And yet she won't let it go. And what I would love from this book, other than people telling me it was a great read, is that they decided to let something go, that they realized that it's not just to punish ourselves over and over and over for the same crime.
And you know, I bet that there have been people that have come up to you and have said to you how reading one of your books has changed their life. Hasn't that happened to you?
Oh, thousands of times. I actually, my walk series, I've had six people at book signings actually tell me that they had made their suicide date. And they were going to take their lives, and the book came into their hands, and they decided not to take their lives because of the series. They decided they're going to follow the series, and after reading it, they found hope. And that's what my books ultimately are about. They're about hope.
And if you had one piece of wisdom that you could pass on to all the parents out there and the older relatives of children and their teachers that really children need to hear, what would it be?
That's a bigger question.
There's
I do get to talk to youth, and it has nothing to do with the mistletoe promise, but to tell them that their lives are far more affected by imagination and hard work than circumstance, that they can make their lives into much more than they think they can. I came from a hard background. I came from a very poor background, and I've been more than 2 million miles. I have met royalty. I've had an amazing life, and it's through the power of imagination.
Absolutely.
And kids need to know that and not live their lives as victims.
Absolutely. And I know that your new book, The Mistletoe Promise, is going to become a favorite for many of your readers because it has the power to make you cry and rejoice, that love has the power to heal. And what did you find was most challenging about writing this book?
Yeah, I didn't really find it challenging. It was a joy to write it. I loved the premise of the book. I honestly, when I finished it, I didn't think it would do that well. I thought, you know, it's a really nice story with a powerful message, but you know, it just didn't feel like a huge bestseller to me. And apparently I'm completely wrong.
Richard Paul Evans, in conversation with Carol Marks, his book is titled The Mistletoe Promise, The True Meaning of Christmas, published by Simon & Schuster. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kevin Casey, the executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication that serves the talk radio industry. We'll take a peek behind the curtain, see what's happening in the media. And then after that, we'll be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. A lot coming your way when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this time, as is customary every week, by Kevin Casey. He's our senior correspondent. He's also vice president and executive editor at the trade magazine Talkers at Talkers.com. That's a trade publication that serves the talk radio, television, and media industries. And Kevin, here we are the weekend before Christmas. And all through the house, I get the feeling that there's a lot of charity work being done on radio, not just talk radio, but all radio at this time of year. What's your observation?
It's definitely true, Michael, and it does. It's in all formats, talk and on music radio as well. But, both types of stations focus heavily on this sort of stuff this time of year, and everything from raising coats for kids, toys for kids. A lot of news talk stations will focus on military and military families. The Fisher House Foundation is a well-known charity within the news talk realm that provides housing and assistance to the families of those who are being treated at VA hospitals and in places like that. And there are also charities that send packages to the troops stationed overseas during the holidays so that they get a little holiday love. So, and that's just a little bit of it. Children's hospitals also get a lot of attention this time of year, but it does happen, and you don't always hear about it, but radio really does a fantastic job of raising money at both the local and the national level for a lot of really, really good charities.
Those are the two things that radio does, you know, year in and year out, especially during holidays, but all throughout the year. Charities and also servicing communities during natural disasters. And we seem to have a number of those on a regular basis. I don't think we have more of them than we've ever had before. People, politicize it and say global warming and all that, which may be, there may be global climate change. But there are a lot of these incidents where the power goes out or people are confused. And radio is a great service during those times.
No question.
All right. Well, listen, happy holiday to you and your family, and certainly enjoy talking to you, Kevin. You're an important part of this program, and we look forward to many more conversations. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Kevin Casey. He's a senior correspondent on A Touch of Gray. He's also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, located at talkers.com. You, as a talk radio listener, I know you are because you're doing it right now. I caught you. Would certainly find the information at Talkers very interesting to see what's going on with your favorite hosts and what's happening in this particular industry. It's at talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Holy night, the stars are brightly
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who's in conversation now with Dr. Dean Shorzai. He is a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and the Department of Neurosurgery and is director of a new Alzheimer's prevention program at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. The program focuses on prevention, intervention, research, and support.
Dr. Shorzai, first of all, how serious a problem is Alzheimer's in America today, not even looking forward?
It's actually, now the latest data came back and shows that it's either the second or third leading cause of mortality, morbidity in America. This is profound. This is a disease that affects more than 10% of those over the age of 65 and nearly 50%, 45 to 50% of those over age 85. So it's quite important topic.
Wow. And obviously, with those kinds of statistics, as we do have aging baby boomers and people who might be otherwise healthier living longer, is it predicted that we will have more of a the numbers of Alzheimer's patients will increase dramatically?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's predicted that by 2050 we will have anywhere between 13 to 15 million subjects suffering from Alzheimer's and from dementia in general and Alzheimer's. And this number is just the tip of the iceberg because we are not looking at cognitive decline and what it how it affects the financial systems. There is some data that shows that the cost to the healthcare system could be anywhere between 1.3 to all the way to $20 trillion. I mean, looking at how it impacts the entire healthcare system. And this is the disease that will actually break the healthcare system. So we really have to pay attention to it.
Do we know what causes it?
We don't, in particular, we don't know what particularly causes it, but we know that it's there is about 10% of people who have purely genetic, meaning they, if they have the genes, the particular combination of genes, they're at much higher risk. But we also know that there's a lot of lifestyle factors and other factors that put people at greater risk. So it's not like the the diseases where if it's an infection, we know what bacteria causes that, the disease, and you just treat it. It's much more complex than that. It seems to be a combination of genes, environment, and the risk factors that one accumulates over a lifetime. And at the end of the day, we believe that it's going to be a combination of those things that we have to address in order to avoid Alzheimer's or treat it.
Now, obviously, the earlier it is diagnosed, the easier it is to treat. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we know that once the disease, we've had multiple drugs that we've shown to have an effect on models of Alzheimer's and animal models. But when we applied it to the Alzheimer's patients, almost all of them have failed. And they have not shown any results, we believe, because once a person develops Alzheimer's or advanced Alzheimer's, it's not much at this point can be done to reverse it. But early on, many things, when people have been diagnosed with symptoms, early symptoms, what they call mild cognitive impairment or early symptoms of Alzheimer's, and when we've instituted exercise, when dietary changes, lifestyle changes, they've had significant effect. And we believe that we can actually apply certain drugs that have been tried in later disease to earlier stages, and we might have, we probably will have greater success. So early identification is important for many reasons. One is potential treatment. The other is the more pragmatic, which is, getting things in order, making sure that we have the situation better assessed, and making sure that it's not something else, some other disease that are adding to the risk and of the Alzheimer's progressing.
Now, your new program at Cedars-Sinai is designed to identify people who are at risk and thereby reduce the impact. So who is at risk, and how do you identify these people?
Well, like I said, there are those that have genetic risk factors, and so we people who have family members, parents, grandparents who've had Alzheimer's are at greater risk. and then those who have some genetic types. Though it doesn't, it's not a foregone conclusion, but if you have an APOE4, you're at a higher risk of having it. If you have certain other kind of genes, you're at a higher risk of having the disease. But more importantly, if you start having the early symptoms, you know, early signs of memory problems, forgetfulness, losing things, well, I don't want to scare the audience. Everybody has those.
Right.
But a combination of those, more than usual, and especially if others have noticed that there is something different as far as memory and thinking and processing, at that stage, identifying the people and then looking at biomarkers, looking at the brain, looking at more specific neuropsychological testing to kind of categorize how much their risk is critical, because then at this point we can put them into different clinical trials, looking at them going forward as far as lifestyle and different kind of factors to see if we can reduce the progression of the disease.
Now, you mentioned diet, lifestyle, exercise, and certainly these would be factors for anyone's cognitive health as well. So are there some things that perhaps all of us should be doing, and are there things all of us should be avoiding?
Yes. And there is, in science, the beauty of it is that we really have to say that with the knowledge that we have today, we know that exercise, regular aerobic exercise, reduces the risk of dementia in general. We know that eating healthy, that comes down to eating more vegetables, less, less fatty food, less sugars, things of that nature, reduces the risk as well. Keeping cognitively active, mentally active, it helps if you've done it throughout life, but even later in life, keeping mentally active is very important, and socially active has been shown to be somewhat protective. And then if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, these other diseases, keeping a closer eye on those, keeping a closer track, and making sure that those don't get out of control are important. So basically exercise, regular exercise, aerobic exercise, mental activity, social activity, and surveillance and better management of one's own the chronic diseases seem to be the things that give greater protection against dementia in general.
How much aerobic exercise? People are always questioning, do I need to, is just walking sufficient? Do I need to elevate my heart rate? Do I need to do it for hours? What's your thoughts?
Well, we haven't completely specifically determined that, but it's individual. So, but I always tell my patients, walking is great. Walking fast, so that you increase your heart rate 3 to 4 times a week, up to 25 to 30 minutes a day. Working your way up to that seems to be what's most effective, and doing it in a way that you can actually repeat it and continue doing it for the rest of your life. That's why a walk around the neighborhood at a rapid rate, so that it raises your heart rate, is the most feasible one. Another thing that I always tell people, having something in the home like a stationary bike or a recumbent bike, something that's in a living space, that makes it more accessible.
Yeah.
The more likely that the greater proximity of something makes it more likely to happen. So walking around the neighborhood is great. Going to the gym is great. But even closer in the living space, having a recumbent bike, something like that, that allows you to exercise regularly would be fantastic.
Is cognitive decline something that we all have to look forward to, or is it something that as we age, maybe we might lose a little bit off the fastball, but we don't necessarily have to have, age doesn't necessarily mean cognitive decline?
Well, with aging, you do see loss of neurons. You do see some slowing of certain processes. But most of us now believe that although there is a slowing of how you process things and memory gets a little slower as well. But in general, you compensate with experience, with your perspective, and so in totality, you shouldn't decline. That's if there is no disease, if there's no dementia, if there's no cognitive decline, if there are no strokes. So if you can avoid those things, people should be able to function cognitively normal for a long, long time. So it's a little complex. You do
right.
lose certain things, but you do have some compensation as far as your vocabulary for memory and things of that nature that compensates more. And so if you do see a decline more than usual, you can't just attribute it to aging. It's something that should
yep.
be checked out and should be assessed to make sure that it's not the beginning of, or doesn't predict oncoming dementia.
That's Dr. Dean Shirzai in conversation with Steve Wiseman, and he is with Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. Steve Wiseman returns in our final segment to discuss charity scams, what to be careful about. There are plenty of them out there, especially at this time of year. That's next, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-yap.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we're joined by Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, who is an attorney. He's an expert on most of the topics we talk about on this radio show and more. He's also a prolific author, and he's one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud and advocates on protecting the public. As a matter of fact, he has a website that is aptly titled scamicide.com. He has written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and his new one is called Identity Theft Alert, also published by Prentice Hall. Steve's here now to discuss charity scams.
Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, we're almost at Christmas, and a lot of people are thinking not just about their shopping, but about other people and helping other people. Remember, we're all here to help other people. I don't know what the other people are here for, but bottom line is a lot of us are looking to make some donations to charities and really to think of the real spirit of the season of helping others. But you got to be careful because these scam artists, these criminals, the only criminals that we refer to as artists, are out there taking advantage of your charitable impulses. You know, even if you're on the federal do not call list, charities, legitimate charities, are allowed to call you to solicit a donation. The problem with that is if you get a telephone call from, well, frankly, anyone, you can never be sure who it is. So if it purports to be from a particular charity, you just don't know. It may be, it may not be. But you can't give information such as your credit card or other personal information over the phone to someone just because they say they're from a charity. And don't trust your caller ID. Because when you look at your caller ID and maybe it says from the Heart Association or the Cancer Society, you might think that it's legitimate because it appears to be coming from them. But there's a technique called spoofing by which the scammers can make it appear that they are calling from the real charity when they're not. So if you think it's a, you get a call or you just decide on your own you want to give to a charity, your best bet is to go online to the website for the charity itself and make sure you spell it right and make sure you type it in right, because that can send you to a phony website as well. But you can go to the legitimate website and make your donation there securely online. However, one last thing, and that is whenever you're going to make a donation, look up the charity first on charitynavigator.org. This is a company, and it's a website, free service, that you can go to and you can check out a couple of things. First, is it a legitimate charity? Particularly this time of year, there are a lot of firefighter and police charities that sound like they're legitimate but aren't. So you can look up the name, find out on charitynavigator.org if it is legit or not. Second thing, though, you can find out is how much of the money that they collect goes toward their charitable purposes and how much goes to just line their own pockets for administrative fees and salaries. The rule of thumb is usually if it's more than 25% that's going to administrative costs, you might want to consider another charity. But do your homework, check out the charity, make your donation, and help your fellow man.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman. And again, the website to go to for more information is charitynavigator.org. That's charitynavigator.org. And keep in mind, Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall, by Steve Wiseman. And the website is scamaside.com. And that about does it. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santinella, on the front line, our producer. And, of course, thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of all of us here at A Touch of Gray, I'm Michael Harrison, wishing you a very, very Merry Christmas. And certainly we invite you to join us next weekend, right here, Christmas weekend, for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.